Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports, right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. Today, we're going to gear a little bit more to the national sports scene, but there is plenty of stuff going on locally. I know today, first day of practice for both Carbon and Emory football teams. We're going to be talking some Carbon and Emory football here relatively soon, pretty much throughout the week. Starting tomorrow, we'll get you some updates on how the teams are doing, all in preparation for the season opener, which will be August 17th. And do not forget, you can listen to Emory High School football right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. And then you'll be able to follow Carbon High School with the other outlets as it has been offered over the past couple of decades, but also now on 95.3 The Peak, or sister station KRPX. So we are gearing up for football season. NFL on Thursday. We'll have college football on Saturday. We're going to have all kinds of football coming up for you in the coming weeks. As far as what's going on right now locally, the Helper Merchants, the American Legion Baseball State Championship Tournament. It's taking place right now. Helper over the weekend goes 1-1. Helper lost the opening matchup to Syracuse 8-4, dropped Helper into an elimination contest Saturday afternoon, and they picked up a 5-1 victory over North Cache. Right now, as we speak, Helper is going toe-to-toe with Salem Hills. A win here means that Helper would play either Mountain Crest or Syracuse tomorrow in another elimination contest. Now, here's the rotten part. Falling into the one-loss bracket that early, Helper would have to win 6 consecutive games to win a state championship. 1 down, 5 to go. We'll try to keep you updated on how Helper is doing. Again, that's at the state championship tournament right now. This game is taking place at Salt Lake Community College's baseball field. And if we can get you a scoreboard update, we definitely will. Now, speaking of baseball, if we move to the national side of things, we are on the eve of the trade deadline. And I think for the most part, the big names are done. I mean, Manny Machado's on his way out. We talked about Bryce Harper on Friday. I don't believe Bryce Harper is actually going to be dealt, although there are some rumors picking up with Bryce Harper. Jay Happ's already gone. Maybe you see Chris Archer go. That's probably the next biggest name to fall. But teams are starting to position. And we've talked about buyers. We've talked about sellers. We will talk Major League Baseball and the trade deadline coming up. Next segment, we'll be joined by Steve Bordstein, great friend of mine. He's the host of First Sports on Fox Sports 1340 in Farmington, New Mexico. He'll fill in today for Bill Lasky, who is our typical baseball insider who joins us every Monday. Bill taking the week off, and so Steve Bordstein is going to join us a little bit later on in the show. Let's take a look at the national sports headlines, and we'll begin in the NFL. Sam Darnold has signed his rookie contract. He now joins the New York Jets at practice. It took a little bit longer than expected, but they finally got a deal done. Darnold had a little bit of a holdup. 4-year contract for the slotted amount of $30.2 million. That deal includes a $20 million signing bonus. It's one of the richest deals in Jets history. By rule, the contract is fully guaranteed, and it does include the standard fifth-year club option. Darnold was able to join his teammates immediately after signing that contract today at about noon Mountain Time, and now the Jets have their quarterback. And that's been the problem in New York for how long? This team hasn't had a quarterback, right? Sam Darnold is now joining the Jets. And we get NFL football this week. Thursday, we have the Hall of Fame game. So if you're a Jets fan, That's fantastic news. Elsewhere in the national sports front, LeBron James talking for the very first time since signing a contract with the Los Angeles Lakers. LeBron had a sit-down interview with ESPN's Rachel Nichols, talked a little bit about making his decision in joining Los Angeles. Here's LeBron in his own words.
And I definitely thought long and hard about the possibilities of lining up alongside Ben and Embiid, or lining up beside Harden and Chris. I felt like at this point in my career, the ultimate for me, just like when I went to Miami, everyone kind of looks at me joining a super team. But if people look at, I think Miami was 35 right. and 47, the year before I joined that team. And you can look at the Lakers, a record from. So I like the challenge. I like the challenge of being able to help a team get to some places that they haven't been in quite a while. And obviously the Lakers haven't made the playoffs in a few years, but the Lakers organization and the historical franchise matches up there with all the greats. You can look at, the Cowboys, and you can look at the Patriots. You can look at Manchester United, Boston Celtics. These are like historical franchises, and for me to be a part of that, it's just I think it's a great moment for not only me, but for my family and for the history of basketball in general.
Again, that's LeBron in his first comment about his decision to join the Los Angeles Lakers. In Akron today, it was the first day of school for 240 at-risk students who were attending the inaugural year of the I Promise School, and that's all thanks to LeBron James. It's an extension of the LeBron James Family Foundation to give kids opportunities to thrive despite some of the difficult life situations that they are tasked with. And that's LeBron's first statement about deciding to join the Los Angeles Lakers. Really, that's the extent of what's happening in the national sports front right now. Let's take a look at Major League Baseball and the scoreboard and where we're sitting at right now. Before we do that, I want to take a look at the standings, though. Because, again, the trade deadline is tomorrow, and it's around this time where I think the casual baseball fans really start to take notice of what's happening in the league. AL East, it's all Boston, 74-33. What a tremendous record that is, 74-33, and they have outscored opponents by 177 runs this season. The Yankees would be in second in the AL East. They're at 67-37, 5.5 games back. After that, it's Tampa Bay, Toronto, and Baltimore. The Blue Jays have already made a deal with the Yankees. The Orioles have made a deal with the Yankees. Could Tampa Bay be next? I talked about Chris Archer, who seems to be the hottest name floating around, the 29-year-old starting pitcher, who I really like. And I want to see this kid find a new home, because every year it's marred with trade rumors for this kid. Could be on the move to the Yankees. In the Central Division, it's the Indians at 57-47. The Twins, 8 games under 500, sit in second place, 9 back of the Indians. It's amazing. That's a terrible division. The AL West, it's the Houston Astros, 4 up on the Mariners. And then we have the A's, who are 6 back of the Astros. One of the two most competitive divisions in baseball when you look at it front to back. In the National League, the Phillies have a 1.5-game lead now over the Atlanta Braves. The Braves struggled with the Dodgers. They avoided a sweep with a gem from Sean Newcomb. We'll talk more baseball again next segment, and I'm sure the Braves will pop up during that discussion. In the Central, we get the Chicago Cubs and the Brewers. Both teams have 61 wins. The Cubs 3 up on the Brewers in the loss column. And then you have the Pirates and the Cardinals, who are serious players for the wild card, but 7 and 8 games back of the top of the division. And then in the NL West, here's the other highly competitive division in baseball. The Dodgers at 59-47. The Diamondbacks a 1/2 game back, 1 behind the Dodgers in the loss column. The Rockies are a full game back of the Dodgers, and the Giants are 6.5 back. So you have a 4-team race legitimately in the National League. And so that's kind of where we're sitting at as far as the standings go on the eve of the trade deadline. Now let's take a look at all the baseball that we get coming up this evening, and it will start at 5 o'clock on ESPN, a nationally televised game. Aaron Nola will take the mound for the Philadelphia Phillies, and they'll take on David Price and the Boston Red Sox at Fenway. Love that matchup. Again, that's going to start here in about 40 minutes on ESPN. 5:30 start time, we get the Marlins at the Braves. The Minnesota Twins will take on the Cleveland Indians at 6 p.m. At 6:10, it's the Rockies and the Cardinals. It's a very important game. When you get down to the final 50 or so games of the season, these are the ones that really count. We get Texas and Arizona at 7:40. The Dodgers and the Brewers are the second game of the doubleheader on ESPN. Manny Machado playing for the very first time at Chavez Ravine. That's kind of crazy. It seems like Machado was dealt, 2 weeks ago is what it seems like. Hasn't played at Dodger Stadium yet. We get Toronto and the A's at 8:05 and two nightcap games at 8:10. The Astros will take on Seattle, and then the Giants will battle the Padres. And that's a quick look of everything that's happening in the national sports front. It is a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we're going to continue in just a couple of moments right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. The 2018-2019 high school sports season is right around the corner, and those that will run through the fall months are gearing up for action. The first official contest for Carbon High School will take place on the tennis court as the Lady Dinos travel to meet the North Stampede Hawks on August 9th. The Lady Dinos will continue the season on August 15th at home against Grand. Football will open up the season on August 17th at home against the Manti Templars on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. Entering season four under head coach Josh Huntsman, the Dinos will play their first road game the following week against Payson. The first region contest of the year will be September 14th against Union. The cross-country team will start the season on August 23rd at Wayne High School for the Badger Invite. September 19 will mark the lone home meet for the Dinos as they play host to the Carbon Invitational. This year's region meet will take place at Lakeside Park on October 10th. Soccer will open the season on Tuesday, August 14th at home against the Gunnison Bulldogs. The final home game will take place on September 27th against Delta. The opening round of the state championship tournament is scheduled for October 10th. And looking to build off of last year's third-place performance at the state meet, the boys' golf team will start the season at Union in the second week of August. The final schedule for golf will be completed in the coming days. And under the instruction of new head coach Teresa Maurer, the volleyball season will begin for Carbon when they travel to Emory on August 22nd. The first home game will be on August 28th against Altamont. Now, the Emory Spartans will also start the fall sports season here relatively soon. The Lady Spartans soccer team will travel to meet Cypress on August 9th. The Lady Spartans will continue the season August 10th against Ben Lomond. Football is not far behind. The season is set again to open on August 17th. The Spartans will be at home against the Richfield Wildcats on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. They're entering year three under head coach John Famalo. The cross-country team will begin the season August 17th at Sugar House, and September 17th will mark the lone home meet for Emory. This year's region meet will take place in Moab on October 9th. The girls' tennis team will start the season on August 24th, and they will travel to meet San Juan and then play host to Richfield on August 28th. And the volleyball season will begin again for Emory as they take on Carbon on August 22nd. You can get the full schedules throughout the fall season for both Carbon and Emory by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. We move over to the national sports scene, and the Utah Jazz have announced the team's five-game 2018 preseason schedule, which will feature three home games at Vivint Smart Home Arena. Utah will play host to NBL's Perth Wildcats from Australia in the preseason opener on September 28th and Adelaide 36ers of the NBAL on October 8th. It marks the second straight season that the Jazz have played a team from Australia's NBL, last season hosting the Sydney Kings in a 108-83 win at Vivint Smart Home Arena. Last year's meeting was the first time an NBL team's traveled to the U.S. to play against NBA teams. Now, of course, this upcoming year, you will be able to listen to the Utah Jazz on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. You'll also be able to listen to Emory High School Athletics along with USU Eastern. Carbon High Athletics will air on KRPX 95.3 The Peak. And today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we'll talk a lot of local baseball. We recently had the Pacific Southwest Regional Championship for the 8 and 14-year-olds wrap up here in the Castle Country over the weekend, on Friday actually. And the Helper Merchants participated in the opening round of the American Legion State Championship Tournament, which will continue later on throughout the week. We'll talk about that, plus the Major League Baseball trade deadline, which is rapidly approaching, tomorrow to be exact. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini. Let's talk some Major League Baseball here on the show today. It is Monday, dog days of summer. We're still about a week away from the college football preseason rankings. We do have some NFL football coming up this week, though. But right now, the rampant rumors of the hot stove in Major League Baseball with the trade deadline fastly approaching. We're going to talk that and more right now with our next guest, Steve Bordstein. He is the host of First Sports, Fox Sports 1340 in Farmington, New Mexico. Steve, it's a pleasure to get you on as always. Thank you again for the time today.
Always looking forward to chatting with you.
Trade deadline is really interesting this year because, to me, in the American League, we have three teams that have really set themselves apart. I know that the A's have played great baseball. I know the Mariners have played great baseball. But in my eyes, I can't get past the fact that it's going to be Houston, Boston, or New York. And the more and more this goes on, even though the Yankees have made trades, I can't see the AL being anything other than Boston and Houston for the American League championship, which I would absolutely love to watch. That's compelling. Can't miss baseball. With that being said, how impressed are you with the Yankees after the moves that they have made, not only recently, the trades that they made to improve the roster, but they've done it within their own division? How impressed are you with this team?
I mean, I guess there's a level of impressed you have to be with the Yankees and certainly the Red Sox, who are 5.5 games in front of them right now in the American League East. Look, the Giancarlo Stanton thing, I don't know if they've gotten quite the productivity that they thought they were going to get from him when they acquired him this past offseason. But you look at the moves they've made in the recent weeks, and they've clearly bolstered their bullpen. They've clearly bolstered, you know, what's kind of a shaky rotation to begin with. That being said, now with Aaron Judge out for what could be 3 weeks, we're being told he'll be allowed to swing in 3 weeks, but does that mean he's going to be playing in 3 weeks? I think they're a wild card, and if you'd have told me that a team that had Aaron Judge, that had Giancarlo Stanton, that had those players in that lineup was going to be battling it out in a one-game wild card, I think that would be a vast disappointment to a lot of Yankees fans out there. So that I think has to be a concern. Boston is playing out of their absolute minds right now, but you have to wonder again, when does the real David Price show up? When does that rotation start to get a little bit shaky? I agree with you. I think Houston is still, even though they don't have the record necessarily of a Boston Red Sox, I think Houston's clearly set themselves apart right now. And it's sad. You mentioned the Oakland A's. How well are they playing right now? And a team that no one talks about that I think is going to get a lot of attention next year, the Tampa Bay Rays. They're 20 games behind the Red Sox and the Yankees for first place in the American League East. Tampa Bay's playing decent ball. They're 20 games out of first place. But those are teams to follow next season, are both Oakland and Tampa Bay. I like what New York's doing, but I think it's a shame that a team with that kind of lineup is probably going to be playing for a wild card.
Okay, let's talk about the Tampa Bay Rays, because this is a team that is really picking up a lot of attention at this point in time, because Chris Archer seems to be the biggest potential player, the biggest asset that's available right now as we go into the trade deadline. I love Chris Archer. I've had conversations with people over the weekend who think he's a little bit overrated. I do not. I think when you look at the value pitching stats, this kid is very good. And be it the Dodgers, be it the Yankees, be it the Padres who have interest in him, whoever gets him is getting a pitcher that they are going to be able to use for the next couple of years. It's not a rental. It's not Yu Darvish. It's not an aging Justin Verlander. We're talking about a kid that's 29 years old, has shown flashes of being an all-star in this league. And on top of that, Steve, he has a very affordable contract over the next 2 years. Chris Archer right now has got to be the biggest get out there for any team trying to make a move.
You talked about, you know, people saying his numbers aren't that great or maybe he's a little bit overrated. Let me throw out some numbers here. The Boston Red Sox have scored 569 runs this season. The New York Yankees have scored 540 runs this season. Those are the top two in Major League Baseball. Those are the top two scoring teams in all of Major League Baseball. Who pitches against them quite a bit? Chris Archer. So naturally, his numbers are going to be a little inflated. You look at the top five scoring teams in all of Major League Baseball this year, four of them are in the American League. Chris Archer pitches against the American League predominantly all the time. So his numbers are going to look inflated. To your point, I agree with you. I think he comes to the National League. I think he does great in the National League. Wherever that is, he winds up going. Do I want it to be the Dodgers? Absolutely, but I don't want the Dodgers to overpay for him also. Because I don't think the Dodgers necessarily need a starting pitcher. pitcher as much as they need guys who are going to be reliable coming out of the bullpen when they get into the stretch run here. But to me, Chris Archer is the most sought-after name right now in all the players that we're hearing about right now. I'm hearing rumors of San Francisco going after him. We're hearing rumors of a number of teams, including teams that aren't even in necessarily a playoff chase. Hell, San Diego, I keep hearing, is talking about going after Chris Archer right now. So wherever he winds up, if he goes to the National League, those numbers will drop immensely in the next two seasons wherever he winds up going if he's not really a rental. And I agree with you. His contract is such that wherever he goes, he should be there long term.
Yeah, that's why teams who are out of it right now, teams that should be sellers, are buyers for Chris Archer, because he's 29 years old. He's a year removed from an All-Star appearance, and his contract is so likable over the next couple of seasons. I believe it's a $7 and $9 million over the next 2 years. Steve, when we were talking about the Dodgers, you say that you don't believe this team needs starting help. So let me throw these questions out there for you as we get down into the final stretch. Do you trust Clayton Kershaw with the injury history? Have you seen enough from him to believe the Dodgers don't need a reinforcement in a potential number one or number two? And have you seen enough from Rich Hill as well?
I've seen enough from Clayton Kershaw that I know I can get six innings out of him. I've seen enough from Rich Hill to know I can get six innings out of him. I know that we have guys coming off the DL soon that are going to be very good for the Dodgers if they play to their potential. I worry about the bullpen. I worry about the 7, 8, and 9 inning guys. And that's what the bullpens become in the postseason. In the postseason and in the stretch run, your bullpens are no longer reliant on one guy and then one guy to finish. It's reliant on three or four guys. And that's what the Dodgers are going to be looking for. I do think that guys that are on that rotation right now in that bullpen, Tony Cingrani, Josh Fields, Pedro Baez, they're all working their way back to the disabled list. These are guys who I trust in that bullpen. These are guys who I know we can throw out there. So I don't think there is desperate for starting pitching so long as the guys that we have on that current rotation right now, and I say we, and I apologize, I'm a Dodgers fan, that's kind of weird, but I trust that rotation as it is to get six innings. Beyond that, no. But I don't need them for six. I don't need them for nine innings if I know the bullpen is going to be out there. So that's why I think if you're the Dodgers, you're looking for one more reliable bullpen arm, whoever that might be. If there's one more reliable bullpen guy out there, that's fine. But I'm not trying. I don't want to sell the farm for him.
Steve Bordstein, again, the host of First Sports on Fox Sports 1340 in Farmington, New Mexico. We'll talk more about that show in just a moment. There have been some, I don't want to say under-the-radar moves, but there's been some more lower-key moves in Major League Baseball. One of them was Cole Hamels. This really didn't pack the punch that I thought it would once he was moved. The Cubs grabbed Cole Hamels, and you know what? This right here, there's no other way to describe this. This is a replacement for Yu Darvish. That's exactly what Cole Hamels is, Steve.
And I couldn't happen to a nicer guy, could it? If you're a Dodgers fan, you and I hate to say this, but as a Dodgers fan, I have enjoyed watching the demise of Yu Darvish in a Cubs uniform this year. A, because it's the Cubs. B, because I still blame Darvish for losing Game 7 for us in the World Series last November. Look, it's a sad situation, but that trade. Alex Rodriguez last night during the Cubs Cardinals broadcast, he said it best. That move to pick him up was a debacle for the Chicago Cubs. And I don't know what happened to Yu Darvish when he left Texas. I don't know what went wrong with him. I don't know if it's an after effect of Game 7, whatever. But that was a disaster. So Cole Hamels, as old and fragile as he still might be, the fact that he's an upgrade to Yu Darvish is really more an indication of Yu Darvish than it is of whatever he can provide, Cole Hamels that being, of whatever he can provide to the Cubs down the stretch.
It's insane to think about. I mean, really, when you go back and you take a look at Yu, Darvish was good up until the World Series.
Yep.
He was great in the playoffs. I think Dodger fans forget, Steve, just how dominant he was against Arizona. I think they forget just how good he was against the Cubs. He was dreadful against the Astros, and that whole idea of him tipping pitches, that didn't happen, because this guy just flat out stinks now.
No, he didn't tip pitches. He just threw badly. I mean, and the idea that Cole Hamels is going to start a playoff game against the Cubs, I'm sorry, I just don't. I think it's ironic because when Cole Hamels was playing for the Tampa Bay Rays in 2008, who was his manager at that time? Joe Maddon.
Right.
Right. How ironic would that be? That, you know, 10 years later, it'd be a rematch with that. So I get the connection with Joe Maddon, and I think it's a great, it's a cool story, but I think it's more a story, and I think it's just more them just trying to fill in the gap left behind by Yu Darvish this year.
I agree. Steve, there is another topic that has popped up in Major League Baseball, and it's unfortunate. And it's really some of the stuff here on Drive Time Sports that I hate talking about based off the political aspect of it, but you can't ignore the fact that some very bad publicity has been thrown towards Major League Baseball. Specifically, over the weekend, Sean Newcomb, who is pitching a no-hitter against the Dodgers, which that's saying something for a team that has been hitting the ball the way the Dodgers have throughout the month, some old tweets started coming to light. Now, this is not the first time this has happened. In fact, it also happens with Trey Turner, and it also happened during the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Now, you and I had a conversation about this off of the cuff, and this is a situation or a topic that you have a very interesting take on. So I'm curious to hear that here on the show today.
Okay, so while we all run around this issue of the National Football League and what we refer to as the so-called anthem protests, I do have an issue with this. And I have an issue with the anthem protests because I don't really believe that anybody ever really stopped watching football or that anybody really boycotted anything. That's another story for another time. But we do have an issue here, because what we see here with the Sean Newcomb situation, the Trey Turner situation, and the Josh Hader situation are three very white athletes making disparaging comments about all sorts of people, whether they be African Americans, whether they be the gay lesbian community, what have you. But we're giving them a free pass because, well, they were kids. Okay. So now you go to the other side here, and this may be a reach, and that's cool. I'm cool with it being called a reach. African-American players protesting racial inequality in the National Football League. We don't want to hear anything about that. We don't want to deal with that. We don't ever want to talk about that, and we don't want that on our football fields, and we don't want that interrupting our games. If we look at the NFL teams as a business, and if we look at the Major League Baseball teams as a business, they are franchises, part of a large corporation, the NFL and Major League Baseball. The NFL has 32 franchises, Major League Baseball has 30 franchises. If we look at them as individual franchises, what's worse? What's a worse look right now? NFL players, employees, protesting racial inequality, or Major League Baseball players essentially being given a free pass for being a bunch of bigots. And the fact that we gave, the fact that 30,000 people at Milwaukee Stadium 2 weeks ago, less than 2 weeks ago, gave Josh Hader a standing ovation when he came back on, when he came onto the field in a relief performance against the Dodgers shortly after the All-Star break, the fact that 30,000 people gave him a standing ovation, I don't know if that was so much because he was being apologetic or if because that's actually what he said 7-8 years ago is actually a view espoused by a lot of white people going to Major League Baseball games. And I know it's controversial, but the whole idea of, quote, these events took place in the past is not a good enough argument anymore. These issues are systemic. These ideals and values are rooted into our fabric and our history. They have nothing to do with a particular current president. They've been in our society for 50, 60 years now. But the whole thing of this being about an anthem in the NFL, it was never about an anthem. It's about an issue of people who have a certain feeling of impropriety, that they are immune to any sort of criticism whatsoever simply because of the color of their skin.
You know, though, I get exactly what you're saying, but I will tell you also something else, and this is in regards to the NFL, because I agree with you 100% as far as Major League Baseball goes, but when I look at the NFL, Dak Prescott makes the comment over the weekend that he doesn't believe that that's the time to protest anything, and the backlash that he has received from voicing his opinion, Steve, is outrageous in my mind. It really is.
I heard he got criticized because he has an endorsement deal with Campbell's Soup. Is that right?
He was called out by another NFL player who said, what, you don't want to lose your Campbell's Soup sponsorship?
And the answer to that question is no, absolutely not. I don't want to lose my Campbell's Soup endorsement. That's called business. That's called capitalism.
Exactly. You're exactly right. So the NFL to me, and I guess where I was going at with this, the NFL to me is in a completely different realm than Major League Baseball. And I don't know if it's because football is king in this country, why we're focusing on the NFL when we have this going on in Major League Baseball. And that's pretty much in a roundabout way what you just said, Steve.
Yeah, and the idea that these three players, well, he was 17 when he said it, and they say, and they go on camera, well, that's not really how I think anymore. I don't know that. I have no idea. You could very well think that today. I don't know that, and we take you at your word for it, whereas if you're an NFL player, we throw you under the rug and we bury you and we tag you as a terrible human being, and I don't want to hear what he has to say, but we give Major League Baseball players a free pass. Well, he was 17. I don't know if he doesn't feel that way. I don't know that Josh Hader isn't still a bigot. I don't know that Sean Newcomb still isn't a bigot. I don't know that Trey Turner still isn't a bigot, but because we live in a society where we take certain people at their word and we don't take other people at their word, and that a lot has to do with the color of their skin, is a serious problem that Major League Baseball needs to address.
Let me throw this out there, Steve. And again, I don't know if the two situations are connected or not, but if I'm Commissioner Adam Silver, if I'm Commissioner Rob Manfred, they had an opportunity to sit back and look at the backlash of the NFL. They got free on-the-spot training from the National Football League. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. This is how not to do the anthem protest. This is how exactly not to do this. Do not do anything what the NFL did. And that's why you're hearing now the NFL, okay, what are we going to do now? How do we fix this? It's why this morning the NFL told Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones essentially to shut his mouth about the anthem, to absolutely not say a word about this anymore, because his rhetoric now is causing an even greater consternation. Not just among other players in the NFL, but the league itself.
Steve Bortstein, host of Fox Sports 1340 in Farmington, New Mexico. Steve, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
First Sports, weekday morning, 7 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern. You can listen online through the iHeartRadio app. It's downloadable through your smartphone or wireless device. You can also listen to the Fast Track, weekend mornings, nationally syndicated horse racing show. That airs 8 a.m. Mountain Time, 10 a.m. Eastern, also on the website at foxsports1340.com. If you're in the state of New Mexico, tune in online at 93.9 FM or at AM 1340. You can also follow me on Twitter at Fox 1340 AM.
Steve, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I look forward to more conversations in the very near future. Thank you again.
My pleasure, sir. Anytime.
We got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
Parting shot on the Major League Baseball trade deadline. So we get to about 24 hours away from the non-waiver deadline. It's being reported that the New York Mets will not trade Jacob deGrom or Noah Syndergaard. That surprises me a little bit. Thought the Mets should probably visit full rebuild mode. As far as the Nationals go, Bryce Harper, those rumors aren't going away. I don't believe he gets moved in the next 24 hours. I don't see that happening, which again falls along the lines of what I said last segment. Chris Archer is going to be the biggest name moved between now and tomorrow. I had multiple conversations with people over the weekend. They tell me I'm nuts for saying the Nationals should trade Bryce Harper. I think they should. I don't think this guy's coming back at the end of the year. Here's the deal. Yahoo Sports first reported that the Nationals were at least gauging other teams' interest if they did decide to sell. And now the reports are saying that even Harper has been trying to get some sort of information on if he'll be moved, and he's confused. He doesn't know if he's going to be on his way out. If I'm the Nationals, I ask for six prospects. The Orioles got five for Machado. If I'm the Nationals, six for Bryce Harper. Get you Harper for the remainder of the season. And maybe the inside track to re-sign him going into the offseason. You have a half year to make this kid comfortable. I don't think he's going back to Washington. I really don't. I don't think that anyone within that organization has the guts to trade Harper. Just don't think that's going to happen. But I guess it's possible, to say the least. To me, Chris Archer is the biggest name that is going to be moved here in the next 24 hours. Let's step away from baseball for a moment. I want to talk something out of the norm, out of the lines of the traditional talk here on Drive Time Sports. I want you to think about this for a moment. What is the least popular thing that you enjoy watching? This could go beyond sports. It could go into Netflix. You know, something, I'm not going to call it a guilty pleasure, but something that you watch that really other people look at you and say, why would you watch that? For me, it's the WNBA. I watch the WNBA, and Travis here on the show, he does not understand why. He pokes jokes at me all the time. I love watching Skylar Diggins play basketball. I'm a big Candace Parker fan. I like Diana Taurasi. Women's college basketball is so exciting. I mean, look at the NCAA tournament this last year. It was more exciting than the men's. I enjoy the WNBA. I know a lot of my listeners out there watch the WWE. I can't get into it. I got into it when I was like 10. You know, I bought it for a moment, for a very brief moment. I thought it was real. I think every 8, 9, 10-year-old kid, maybe you believe it's real to some extent at some point in time in your life. Can't get into it anymore. And I know there are grown men that really love the WWE. In fact, ESPN and Fox Sports reported the WWE like it's a real thing. Like the results aren't predetermined. Ronda Rousey, breaking news, Ronda Rousey picks up a win. Okay, she won because Vince McMahon said so. That's why. I don't get that. But hey, everybody enjoys something that maybe is a little bit odd to the majority of others, right? For me, it's the WNBA. I defend the WNBA on a regular basis. They did not help my case this Saturday. I don't know if you saw this or not. It was interesting from the tip-off, literally. This game was played at the Target Center on Saturday, and I don't know if it's the new format or what, because again, there's no conferences. The WNBA, they do a draft just like in the NBA now. You know, you got two individuals, top vote getters. They pick the teams. There's the tip. Nobody knew which direction to go. It was bizarre. It's something that you would see at like a five-year-old junior jazz game. This goes on for like 10 seconds or so. Finally, order is restored, and we get a game. But because of that and how unforgiving social media is, the WNBA was the center of several jokes on Saturday night. And listen, I'm not going to defend it. I get it. That's bad. I don't care if it's an exhibition game or if it's lighthearted or not. You got to know what direction you're going. This is what I was thinking. You remember the movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with Steve Martin and John Candy? It was my favorite movie of all time. Number one on my list. This is what I was thinking.
Going the wrong way!
What?
You're going the wrong way!
He said we're going the wrong way.
Oh, he's drunk. How would he know where we're going?
I was thinking about that movie clip. It's not a good look for the WNBA. You can't defend that. You're a professional basketball player. You got to know what direction to go. But I can top it. I can top it because something was far worse over the weekend. Arena football, which is still a thing. And to me, this is the ultimate. This is the worst. You cannot enjoy arena football anymore. You can't enjoy it. The Arena Bowl took place over the weekend, and Washington wins the Arena Bowl with a record of 2-10 in the regular season. 2-1 postseason record. The Washington Valors lost 10 of their 12 regular season games, but Saturday managed to win the Arena Football League Championship as they topped Baltimore 69-55. How is that possible? For those who don't watch this league anymore, and if you don't, I fully understand why, because trust me, it was this is not fun to watch. I've never really been interested in arena football. Definitely less now than I was 10 years ago when I was mildly interested at best. Even when Utah had the Blaze, I wasn't very interested. There's four teams in the league now. And the two teams that played in the championship are owned by the same group. And the team that won lost 10 games in the regular season. That is insane to me. Washington lost their first seven games, and they were 1-10 before winning the regular season finale against Baltimore, the team that they beat the championship. And they were outscored in the regular season by 160 points and lost every game by an average of 13. And this team won the Arena Bowl. I don't know any Arena Bowl fans. Like I said, we all watch something that the majority of people would say, what? Why do you watch that? I don't know anyone that watches the arena football. I don't know anyone that watches this league. The WNBA, it's entertaining. It's basketball in the summer, and there are some girls that can flat out play. And I'm not saying that nobody in the arena football league can play football. It's just not football. In any league that has four teams and a team that won twice in the regular season wins a championship, that league has lost all credibility. And so as I watched this happen over the weekend, it just got me thinking, what is the most unpopular thing that I enjoy? The WNBA has been around for a long time. And look, even though they didn't know what direction to go on a tip-off of an All-Star game, that's not worse than J.R. Smith not knowing that his team was tied in the NBA Finals Game 1 on the road. It's not worse, not even close. And so to everyone on Twitter that's making fun of that, I'm telling you right now, what J.R. Smith did, it's 10 times worse. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll return and put the final touches on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Now Young with two. Let's it fly. It's good! Nick Young for three!
What's up? This is Nick Young. It's like a kid. You listening to Drive Time Sports on AM 750.
Back here on Drive Time Sports, final segment of this Monday edition. I'm going to bring Travis Anderson back in. We'll close out the show by talking about LeBron James. Why not?
The king.
Let's talk about LeBron here, Travis. Played the clip earlier today. He was talking with Rachel Nichols of ESPN about why he decided to pick the Lakers. And I want you to give me an honest opinion here. I don't want the Laker, the purple and gold rose-colored glasses on here. I want your honest opinion. He said he's looking forward to the challenge of taking a franchise like the Lakers back to a championship level. Is that the reason he's in LA?
I think that's maybe 5%. I think.
Okay, so that's exaggerated then when he says that.
Yes, I think the reason why he went to the Lakers is to live in Los Angeles, to build his brand, and for his kids, it's a family move with his kids because we know that the one kid's a very good basketball player, so you put him into a high, powerful school in California, and I think that has the most to do with it.
Okay, I believe it. I believe that that's why he went to L.A. I really do, because, and this is where I'm changing my tune on LeBron James to an extent, because I thought he jumped from Cleveland and went to Miami because it was a surefire thing. He was going to win a championship in Miami.
He was going to get multiple, yes.
He was going to get at least one.
Yeah, there was no doubt about that.
Okay, because he was playing with two guys that at that point in time were top 10 in the league.
And you can just throw pieces around.
Right. So, to me, that was a slam dunk. As the Heat started declining, he jumped and he went to Cleveland. And regardless of what the talk is, look, he was the general manager of that team, and he basically forced the trade for Kevin Love. He had Kyrie Irving. He had two All-Stars that were primed as D-Wade and Chris Bosh got a little bit older. And it wasn't a slam dunk that he would win in Cleveland, but he had a better chance of winning in Cleveland than he did in Miami.
Yep, and he got one, and that's all he needed to do was get Cleveland one championship, and he could solidify himself for going back to the Cavaliers.
Okay, now, you brought up all the financial reasons why he made the move to L.A., but as I watched LeBron talk today, I believe him. I believe that, I think that LeBron's legacy is set. He's one of the greatest basketball players to ever live. But if he wins three championships with three teams, two of them being the Lakers, a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in 5 years, the other with the Cavaliers, it'd been how long since the city of Cleveland had won a championship? How long had it been?
What, 62 years? Something like that?
To me, that will definitely overshadow the fact that he once left Cleveland to go to Miami, and it will overshadow the fact that he left Cleveland once again.
Oh, he's getting one in Los Angeles.
I think he gets one in L.A.
There's
too.
No doubt. In the next four years, the Los Angeles Lakers will win a championship with LeBron James because they are set up.
I think so, too.
Yeah, because you look next season moving forward, they're going to have a lot more cap space, and you can go out and you can build around them. This year is basically a wash or a punt, as you want to say, with the team around
him. I like the team around him.
I think they're the second best team in the Western Conference right now with the team around him. And I know everybody laughs at the signings, but Michael Beasley was very good last year with the New York Knicks. He shot 36% from the three-point line. He can still play. JaVale McGee's good around the basket. And Lance Stephenson's a guy who can score. So they're the second best team in the West to me.
Third. With the Rockets re-signing Capella, I got to believe that Houston is better.
I think the Lakers are. I think losing Ariza hurts. You lose another piece.
I lost Amute. Yeah, that was another one.
Those are two pieces on the wings that are defending guys like LeBron James. So I think the Lakers are too.
I'm not saying that the financial gains of playing in Los Angeles and playing for a franchise like the Lakers, I'm not saying that right there
was not a determining factor, because if it wasn't, he would have went to the Clippers, right?
No, like that was never going to happen.
No, exactly. So there is some, you know, that the Laker history and the brand name comes along with it. And actually, he even mentioned the Yankees and the Cowboys. I mean, he mentioned the Celtics. He mentioned some of the big name franchises. And look, I mean, honestly, he could have went to Boston. It would not have been that difficult for Boston to facilitate a trade and bring him in. Like, it could have happened. He chose L.A. because of the financial situation that this team is in. And I don't believe that LeBron is honing it in. I don't believe that he's... You called the season a punt. I don't think so, because I think he's in his prime right now. We haven't seen any decline from this guy. For the first time, I honestly believe that LeBron James has made a decision to take a step back, go to a team that isn't proven, and try to win a championship. I actually believe what he said today. And I believed it.
If he gets one with the Los Angeles Lakers, that just solidifies him as being in the top three all time.
Well,
statue, numbers getting retired in Los Angeles. What else can you say?
Yeah,
he'll have his number retired with three franchises.
If he plays 4 years in L.A. and wins a championship,
they're getting one.
They'll retire his number. That'll happen. And so for me, I really truly believe that he did this as a challenge. I think that LeBron is, I don't want to say he's an egomaniac. Maybe he is an egomaniac. Maybe he is. He does have the Chosen One tattooed on his back, so maybe he is an egomaniac. And I think the perception drives him bonkers, the current perception. And one way that you could shut people up is taking over a franchise that has had no luck since their last superstar left and winning a championship. I actually believe the guy. I do. I think there was more to it than financial. Wherever he goes, he's going to make money.
Yes.
Wherever he goes.
He's going to make money. He's going to bring money in. So he's bringing in tons of money with the NBA as well, being in the Los Angeles market. Good for him.
I actually believe the guy. For the first time, I sit back and I look at LeBron and I say, you know what? I agree. I think he is doing this for a challenge. The last two free agency stops, I don't believe there was much of a challenge there. I really don't. We knew he was going to walk through the East, regardless if it was Miami or Cleveland. We knew that. Now, I don't know that he goes to the NBA championship this year. In fact, I don't believe they go to the championship. I think they get one in the next couple of seasons. But I think he did take this one on as a challenge. Out of time on the show today, I want to thank Steve Bortstein for taking out the time to join us. He is Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. We'll be back tomorrow. Be safe. We're out.